Okay, hello and welcome to Entrepreneur Podcast. Today, my guest, Becca Pike, she's a mom of four. I hope that's still true because I was researching you on your past podcast, and owner of Massage Strong Lexington. And she also owns a successful coaching business and now a yoga studio as well.
Yes.
Right? Her first business started at the back of a warehouse where she massaged and learned how to become a business owner. So I'm going to go with a question that you asked on one of your podcasts. Why are you the way you are?
I love this. I'm so impressed with your back of house research. Like, you just knew my whole story. That's phenomenal.
Well, I feel like I've been with you all day because I've been listening to your podcasts and you being interviewed all day. So it's like another hour with Becca Pike.
Yes, that's awesome. Why do I feel I am this way? I think one of my biggest superpowers in business, especially, is that I'm very scrappy. And why I'm that way is because I have no education in business. I didn't go to school for business. I didn't come from a long line of entrepreneurs in my family. I didn't even know that I wanted to be a business owner at all. In fact, I had business classes in college and I completely ignored them and just tried to scrape by the best I could with no care in the world. But whenever I did finally decide that I wanted to start a business, I had to learn the scrappiest way possible. I was on YouTube and reading books and just scouring the internet for anything that I could find, hiring coaches before I could afford them, just doing everything that I possibly could, and taking no prisoners. And I think that it's because there was no business background in my world.
When did the curiosity for business started? Because I see on your Instagram, it says for broke AF waitress. And this is something that I didn't find. And then there's like a massage therapist at the back of the warehouse. What was in between, like here and there?
Yeah. So I was a waitress for way too long. I was a waitress for years and years. I felt like when I was in college waitressing, it was great. Everyone was young. All the servers were young. But as the servers started leaving and going to graduate school and moving on with their life, I just continued to waitress. And I remember being like 27 years old and I'm waitressing with all these like 18-year-old girls. And I'm just like, I have got to get out of here. And one of the girls that was working there, one of the women that was working there, she started going to massage therapy school. And I had gone to college for kinesiology and sports medicine, and I had done nothing with it. And I thought to myself, like, this is right up my alley. I love the human body. I love the medical field. I love sports. I want to become a sports massage therapist. And so I started going to massage school while balancing my waitressing shifts and trying to, you know, I was at that time, I had just met my husband. We were thinking about getting married. Like, my whole life was just beginning. And so for a while I was waitressing and going to massage school. And then I eventually became the massage therapist and I had no intention of becoming a business owner. I wanted to work for a chiropractor or like a physical therapist. And I landed a job with a chiropractor. And at the time, and I guess I still am a little bit, I was a workhorse. I just would not shy away from the most amount of hours I could possibly get. And he had me working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Oh, wow.
And just every 6 days a week. And on Sundays, he called me up one day and he said, hey, on Sundays when the office is closed, you know, if you want to see your own patients and keep 100% of the income, you can. And that had literally never occurred to me. It sounds so basic and it sounds so obvious. But when he said that, I thought, what? Like, I can just go and I don't have to give a cut to you. Because at the time I was getting paid $18 an hour. And a massage at the time was about $65 per hour. So I was going to go from 18 per massage to 65 per massage on Sundays. So that very first Sunday, I saw four of my own patients. I just like called my friends and family. And I made more money that Sunday than I had made all week. And I put my 2 weeks notice in and I went and rented a place because I was like, oh my gosh, of course. Like, and at that moment, I think that an absolute beast was born. It was like a light bulb went off. Like, oh, I can work for my own money. I can not give a cut to anybody. It had literally never occurred to me. And the rest was history. We had 30 massage therapists in the next 3 years under my belt and building out two locations. It happened.
Wow.
Yeah,
I heard that on a podcast about that Sunday, and I was like, oh my gosh, but not so many people would use that as well. Some would be like, okay, you know, I have more money on Sundays, but I can still work here. It's safe, but you moved on and you found a place. Was there something that scared you at that moment? You know, like, oh, I'm not going to get customers, or maybe this place is, that was a warehouse, right? That was the back of the warehouse then.
Yes. Everything scared me. Everything scared me. So I'm often telling my students, you know, like when things get scary, courage is the only thing that you have. I mean, it's not like things weren't scary for me. You know, it's not like the most successful people in the world aren't scared. They're terrified. They just do it anyway, right? Like they're just more willing to take the risks. I remember being really tore up about my first hire. Just really excruciating pain of, I'm never going to be able to find someone that is willing to love my company the way that I love it. I'll never find anyone that is as good as I am at massage. I'll never find anyone that's as reliable. Just all the stories. I remember being terrified of running credit cards because I didn't know the technology. I didn't know how to run a credit card. It wasn't as common back then. I say back then, but it was just 8 years ago. But you like carrying a square card reader in your pocket was very futuristic at the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That all terrified me. And I literally was just taking it one day at a time and trying to figure things out and piece stuff together.
And how did you decide to hire your first massage therapist? Was that also because you could have been just happy there in your own place, having 100% of the return and paying the rent and, you know, all is fine, right?
Yes. My first massage therapist was the hardest and it took me the longest to decide. Once I hired him, it was like the dam broke loose, but it took me a long time because again, all of the thoughts that I had about, you know, nobody being as good as me, like my ego just got in the way, but it was really just my brain trying to keep me small and safe. And I got to a point where I was massaging so much, so many people, and it's very physically laborious. I mean, I was in good shape at the time, but seeing 25 to 30 hours of massage a week is equivalent to like 60 hours of computer work. I mean, there's a lot of lifting of people's bodies and moving around and stuff. And I was pregnant at this point with my first baby, and it just got to be too much. And I remember talking to my husband, and I was just like, I'm just so exhausted. Like, I'm so pregnant and I'm working so much. And, you know, if we want to go on a trip or we want to go do anything, I'm going to have to not make as much money that month. And at the time we were so broke that like the idea of being off work for 2 days and missing out on that income would have killed us. And he was like, why don't you just hire someone to do it? And my first thought was, no way, that's ridiculous. Like, terrible idea. It took me so long to come around to it. I will never forget my first interview. I finally got the courage to do it. I was like, okay, he's right. Like, maybe I can get someone in here. My very first interview, he didn't look me in the eyes when he shook my hand, which is so minor. Now looking back, he was nervous, but I was like, nah, he's not ready. This isn't it. This is all wrong. I canceled the rest of my appointments. I was like, it's not meant to be. I ended up hiring that man though. He ended up becoming a really integral part of the growth of Massage Strong. But, just to illustrate how nervous I was. It was silly.
Yeah. Did your husband have any business background that he could suggest to you, like, oh, get a hire or something?
Yeah. He did not have business background. He did have accounting background. So he went to school for accounting. So he understood numbers on a level that I didn't understand, but he wasn't as strong in the business until later. It was about 2 years later when we had several massage therapists on board. He ended up leaving his job, which was our bread and butter, to come on board full time at Massage Strong. And it was one of the best moves we could have made, because then with both of our brains on the business, it just exploded even more.
Wow. What is the best advice you could give to someone who is also a massage therapist now and is very comfortable with their job, with their salary, but kind of at the back of their mind, they maybe there's something more for me?
Yeah. You know, I don't think that everyone needs to explode the hell out of their business. Like, I think that that's for some people. And you know if it's for you, right? If you're a massage therapist or you're a hairstylist or a coach or whatever, and you're making a comfortable income and you don't want to grow any more than that, that's great. That's totally awesome. Keep doing whatever you want to do. But if you have this like inkling, this knowing and intuition of just, I want to, like, I know that there's potential. I like you stay up at night thinking about it and dreaming about it. When your knowing becomes so loud that you can't do anything about it, you have to simply go all in. And I know that that's a very broad term and you hear it being thrown around a lot, just go all in. But what that means is do everything you possibly can to make it happen. Like, we have one little life and we are all getting older and we're all changing, we're all shifting, but we all have the same opportunities. And to me, it's just a no-brainer. And you start with a YouTube video and you start with a freebie masterclass. And then maybe you buy yourself a $20 book. And then you just continue to increment yourself up until you get to a point where you're learning things that you never thought that you would be learning. It's exactly how it happened for me.
And looking back now, because you own couple of businesses and you have very successful coaching business as well, what should be the first hire once your business is hitting off and starting to grow?
It depends. If you're a brick and mortar business, let's say like a massage therapy place, you're going to hit a bottleneck where either you need to hire another service provider because you are seeing too many clients and you don't have the space or the availability to grow your business anymore without completely overwhelming yourself. So it might be a service provider, or it might be a receptionist. A lot of times admin work and receptionists get overlooked as these, you know, like tools that we can hire and people that are helpful, but they're not like the MVP of the business. They are the MVP of the business. If you are seeing clients and you are missing calls because you're with your patients, or you are trying to like call and catch up with everybody at 7 p.m. at night when you're off work because you're trying to save money by playing the receptionist and the service provider, then it's likely that your first hire needs to be a receptionist. But I always look at people's entire business model and decide first how they're handling the influx of clients and what they need first. And it's different for everybody.
What about online businesses? And if you were just a coach without the businesses offline,
yeah,
what would be the first hire?
Yeah, some type of admin, someone to help you do things, just a whole nother set of hands. So for instance, she's a VA, but she's so much more than a VA. I don't even like to call her a VA. She does everything for me to where all I have to do is literally at this point, I just show up to my Zoom calls. Like, they are all scheduled. They're all created. I will fly to her in Chicago about twice a year, and we will map out all of the webinars that I'm doing, all of the masterclasses that I'm doing, the incentives that I'm giving for people to buy, all of the people that I'm going to work with. And we have it completely mapped to the point where she does everything back end. And I just show up and I coach. And what I wanted from that, and the ultimate goal, if you're an online business, is you want your hours to be used with your brain doing the thing that it's good at, whether that is coaching or whatever it is that you're selling online. If your $30,000 an hour brain is working on a Canva print for 2 hours, you're wasting your time. Someone else can be doing that while you're creating what goes on that Canva print, while you're thinking the like million-dollar thoughts, while you do the only thing that you can do and no one else can do. If there is anything in your business that someone else can do, that should be given to an admin once you reach that point.
Amen about the Canva post.
Yes.
Especially for someone creative like me. I just go in and it's like, oh my gosh, I want to use them all.
Yes. I am always telling people, I'm like, girl, you are about to hit $1 million. You better get off Canva. Unless it genuinely brings you so much joy and it's like your hobby. Otherwise, no. Go do that bigger picture thinking.
How was it for you to hire an assistant? Did you go through anything similar with the first hire for the massage therapy, or was it super easy breezy for you?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, I've been a coach for 4 years. And the very first assistant that I hired was probably like a year in, and she was wonderful. But then one day she came to me and she said, "Becca, I've been listening to your podcast and I've been following you. Obviously, like, I'm your assistant, like, I've been listening to everything. And you've made me realize that I just have this itch I cannot scratch. I want to become a life coach. I'm quitting. You inspired me so much." And I was like, "Oh, great." So she left and I hired my second person who was with me for about a year. Guess what? Same thing happened. She flew with me out to Austin. We went to a mastermind, the mastermind that I coach. It was the live event. And she told me after the event, she said, "I got so inspired in that room that I knew that I wanted to change my business and I'm leaving." And I said, "All right, that's it. No more VAs are allowed to listen to anything that I put out there." But I've had this third VA. And I told her this story and I said, "Listen, I need to know that this is what you want to do. Like, not that you're doing this so that you can get to another career, but that this is what you want to do." And she assured me, and she's been with me now for about 18 months. But it was not difficult to hire, but difficult to find someone that had the staying power and the ability to hold such a company. I think also, you know, this isn't just like I'm sending Canvas over. This is a true company. We are an S corp, and there is a lot to do, and so it requires a lot of work.
Yeah, wow, that's an inspiring story to hire assistants and not to give up.
Yeah, no, assistants are easy to find. They're everywhere. There's good ones all over the place. You will find loyal, phenomenal assistants if you just look. Shameless plug is Sarah Wiles. I found her on Instagram. It's Sara Wiles, and she's just a matchmaker for coaches to VAs.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, and you don't even pay her. The VA pays her. And so you just go in and tell them what you want, and she matches you with someone. It's phenomenal.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a perfect one. Thank you for sharing that. Someone is going to take a note of this, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
For you to go from a massage business to a coaching, was that something that you felt when you started the business, or did you have that idea before? Because, life coaching is not that old as well.
Yeah, right? No, I when I started Massage Strong, and when I was, you know, working towards scaling it, when my husband was coming on board at Massage Strong, I had no thoughts at all about business coaching. It wasn't even in the slightest. My full attention was on the massage business, and I wanted it to explode. I wanted to have, you know, multiple locations over the course of my life. And I just didn't have any thoughts about it. But the community and the city that I live in, I think, started noticing. I started getting more calls from people to ask if they could pick my brain. And I always had fun letting them pick my brain. I would let them take me out to coffee and I would tell them about what I'm doing. And everyone was so kind and excited for me. But eventually I got to the point where I came home and I told my husband again. I said, "I'm doing too much of this brain picking thing. Like, I enjoy it. I literally am having the time of my life going to lunch with all these people, but like, I can't keep doing it at this level." And he was like, "Why don't you charge for this advice?" And I was like, "You can't do that. That's illegal." And he was like, "No, it's called business coaching." And I said, "You just made that up. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard." And I said, "You'd have to have a license for that or something." And he said, "No, you can just do it. You can just charge for advice." And I thought he literally invented the idea of charging for advice. And I went on a quick Google search, found out that it is a reputable, respectable profession, that you don't have to have any sort of like 10-year degree from Harvard in order to provide advice to people. And I had a client that night. I called one of the people that loves to pick my brains. And I said, "Hey, you know what? Like, let's make this official." And she was like, "Absolutely." I had a client that night.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Clients
has never been the problem. It's always been figuring out how to make it scalable.
Yeah, that's like landing a client before you have the business.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a really big part of what I teach my clients, especially, I mean, in the brick and mortar world too, for sure. Like I was definitely massaging people before I even had a place that I had rented, before I knew how to swipe a credit card. But in the coaching world, I see so many coaches go out and they're like, okay, I'm going to build out a full course. I'm going to make sure my website is perfect. I'm going to have 30 episodes of my podcast launched, and then I might start taking clients. And it's like, no, girl, like, go get a client and make sure that you like coaching. Go coach 10 people. And then after 10 people, decide if you want to launch a website, decide if you want to actually do this, right? Like, I think that we are an over preparation culture, and it's just not needed. I wish that there was just a little bit more scrappy in the world.
Have you ever started anything that you actually didn't like? Like you were just saying, like, go out, try, and then just check if you like coaching.
My husband and I were going to do some Amazon fulfillment, like an Amazon fulfillment business, and we didn't like it. It was mainly him, but I was alongside of him trying to help him out. And we realized about 3 months in that we definitely didn't like it, and we shut the business down. We've talked about him becoming like having an accounting firm because of his accounting background. We got about 6 or 8 weeks into the business model, decided we didn't want to do it, and we shut down the idea anyway. So yeah, I think that especially for people that really identify as entrepreneurs, you have a million ideas, not all of them are going to stick. And a lot of times I think with coaching in particular, there is an underestimation of what it actually requires to become a coach, how much grit and thick skin. I think anyone can become a coach, and I think anyone can be successful at coaching. But I think that 90% of people underestimate what it actually takes to get to a level of success in coaching. And that's where most people drop off.
How to be coachable? Because you talked about, getting in the, one thing is getting in a room, being amongst the people. But then you mentioned also in your podcast that when there are only coaches in the mastermind, you often are not vulnerable enough to talk about the real problems you have, because you think you have to talk along some lines, along some coaching, something. And you know, it really resonated with me. I love to go to masterminds in English and abroad masterminds where nobody knows me, because I can get vulnerable. If I'm here amongst the coaches that I know, I have my little guard up. And I know it, and that's why I go somewhere else. And recently I was in this mastermind with Bridget James Ling, and then I noticed, and it's like, a friend of mine has joined him. Like, shit, I'm so ready to be vulnerable. And now I'm like, I'll have to try it in a different way. But it was really, it hit me. And then you talked about it, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
So yes, how to be coachable and how to be vulnerable when you are in a coaching environment.
Yeah. So I totally get that, by the way. I totally understand having a group of people that you don't want to be vulnerable in front of. I've been there. But I think that throughout the years, I've just realized that it's a decision that you have to make. It's like, you can be very uncomfortable because your friend came into Bridget's mastermind, but then making the decision of like, I'm just going to air out my dirty laundry. I'm just going to stand in front of this woman completely naked and be vulnerable. Like, you have to just make that decision. And I have to do the same things too. I tend to I don't know if it's like a problem. It's not a problem with vulnerability. I think I'm very vulnerable and I tell people a lot of things, but I can have trouble asking for help, I guess is what it is. And in the last couple of years, I've just made this mindset shift where every time I'm going into my mastermind with my coach, I have to like prep myself before. And I'm just like, I am showing up. I am literally airing out my laundry. I am paying for this. This is a place that I am going to just be whatever version that I need to be, because that is ultimately the only way that we are going to get coaching, right? There are people in my containers throughout the years that show up and they don't try to pretend to be so smart. They don't try to pretend like they know everything. They stop me and they raise their hand and they're like, what is a funnel? Like, how do I set up a funnel? What does that even mean? You know, like they're like Googling what a webinar is. Those are my favorite students, because they're not refusing or pretending to be something that they're not. The ones that do that, the ones that act like they don't need coaching and they act like everything's fine, they're the ones that I always keep my eye on, because I kind of know that they're not going to hit their potential until they have that shakeup, that just like nervous system shake off and relief of being feeling safe. And I think safety, especially in a safe place, is a choice, right? Safety when you are getting mugged is not a choice. Safety when you are in a safe mastermind is a feeling and is a choice.
Thank you for that. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Talking about your business and automation, what have you used for automation that made your business work better and maybe faster or freed up your time?
I think in the coaching world, especially, is your audience mainly coaches?
Coaches and business owners, online business owners.
Okay, perfect. In the online space, looking at my year in advance has been really helpful, like really helpful. And I don't just mean like, okay, in March, I might have a launch and in June, I might have a launch. When I said that I fly to Chicago and I hang out with my VA, we sit down with marker boards and papers and calendars. And I mean, it is down to the T. And I am constantly repurposing old emails, old launch emails, old sequences. I'm just revamping them, making them fresh and clean. You would be really surprised how much of my stuff that has like gone viral or gets the most click rates is just stuff that I said 3 years ago and have revamped every year. So a lot of recycling, a lot of planning out my launches and exactly what's happening when has been the absolute best. And I am also someone that often tells people, don't plan. You're not working a 9-to-5. So sitting at your desk and trying to find stuff to do all day long as someone that works from your house or someone that's self-employed online, that can give you a feeling of you have things to do, but you don't know what to do with them, right? Once you've planned everything out, once you are recycling your stuff, once you have a VA that's on top of it, get away from your desk. You don't have anything else to do. Go out, go on a hike, go relax, go work out, go hang out with your kids, right? Sometimes I think the biggest stresses that we feel as online business owners is sitting at our desk and trying to force ourselves to work like a 9-to-5 type of style job. And we have all these people or we have a person that's helping and we just don't need to be at our desk anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is that easy for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Easy peasy. I'm peacing out all the time. I've never had a hard time. Now, okay, don't get me wrong. Like, obviously, I have very natural feelings of like, did I do the things that I needed to do? Like, did I do enough? But when I ask myself, did I do enough? I think my answer is almost always yes. Like, I go into my day with an intention to do 2 meetings and write an email. And if those 2 meetings and an email takes up a total of 2.5 hours, that's how long I'm at my desk. Otherwise, I'm reading a book on my couch. I'm walking my dog. I'm hanging out with my kids. To me, the most important part of business owning is having a life. It is the thing. Like, I am never impressed by business owners that are making a bazillion dollars, but they take their laptop to bed with them every night and they wake up to it every day. Like, I just don't get that. That's not what I want to do. I want to be with my kids. I want to be so fit. I want to have hobbies. I want to be date nighting with my husband. I want to be traveling. If I'm not doing those things, then why do I even have a business? Because the whole point is time freedom and money freedom. So I do not have any trouble.
Amazing.
Leaving my desk.
And did you also have, when you just started, was there a dream of like the life you're living now? Or maybe there's something bigger you're also creating, but this like, oh, I want the time freedom. I want the money freedom. I want to, you know, walk my dog at the noon instead of, you know, massaging all day. What was your dream when you were just starting off?
Yes, I have to remind myself all of the time that I have what I had been dreaming of for years, which is simply having, I call it like pittering around my house, like puttering. Like I had this idea of like during the week when everyone's at work, I can just like putter around my house. I can drink tea. I can like watch TV. I could read a book. My kids are at school. I could go out in the garden. I could walk to I have a creek in the backyard. Like I could come back inside and make more tea. I was like, that would be mind blowing. I can't even fathom what that would be like. Because like I said, I was always a workhorse. And I do not say that lightly. I mean, when I was a waitress and a massage therapist by myself, it was 6 a.m. leave the house with my breast pump kit and my cooler bag and my lunch and my gym bag. And I would work until 1 o'clock. And then I would go to my waitressing shift until 8 o'clock. And then I'd hit the gym and then I'd come home. And it was like, I never got to be in my house. I just worked all the time. And so to me, it was always the little things. But I will say that even though I dreamed of having all this time freedom, I think what kept me so motivated was I never put the carrot too far in front of my nose. Like when I was first starting my massage business, if someone said, hey, Becca, I need you to open up 2 massage locations and have 45 staff members in the next 5 years, I would have died. I would have crapped my pants. I would have been like, there is no possible way. I can't fathom that. But that happened because I kept just putting the carrot right in front of my nose. I remember being like working my butt off and being like, if I could hire someone just for Tuesdays, so I could have a day off, that would be the best. And I did. And I hired someone for Tuesdays and I relished in it. And I couldn't believe it. I wasn't thinking about having every day off. I was just so excited to have Tuesdays off. I like wanted to call everyone in my family. I've got Tuesdays off. I can't believe it. 6 months later, I thought, what if I had Thursdays off? That would be crazy, right? And I inchwormed my way into having a completely open schedule now. I mean, we have 3 companies. I work maybe 10 hours a week. I would say 9 of those hours are in the coaching company. I just have a lot of free time, but it wasn't by mistake. That was always the intention from day one.
So you can have that cup of tea and go to the creek.
Yes, I have so many cups of tea.
No, that's amazing. I think we very often forget why we started. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in so many things to do. And like you were saying, it's such a good reminder. It's not 9 to 5 at this desk. It's like you create your own schedule. And it's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Building a business with your husband, for some, it works out. For you, it has been working out as well. What do you think is the secret sauce?
The secret sauce is separating business from work. So we have structured out when we are business partners and when we are husband and wife. Because when we are business partners, we are getting shit done. We aren't romantic about it. I mean, we are like really moving the needle, right? And it requires a lot of hard conversations with other people. It requires a lot of decisions of letting people go and hiring new people. Like, it's heavy stuff. And so we have a separate app on our phone where we only use that to talk business. We're not allowed to text each other business stuff. So if I see a message pop up from Mark on text message, I know that that's my husband and I'm safe to open it. I'm not going to be in the grocery store and he's going to drop a bomb on me that we lost $30,000 or something like that. Like, I know that that app is the safe place for us to talk business and for us to have meetings and talk business there. And then we also have a very strict policy that we've had in place for years. At 5:30, all laptops and phones are off from work. We don't do any work after 5:30, neither one of us at all, ever. I mean, there has been one time in the last 4 years that we have had to break that. And it was because we had a small fire at one of our, there was a literal fire at one of our companies. It was fine. Everything was fine. But we hold on to that very strongly because, again, the whole reason that we're doing this is for our family and for our business. So what would be the point if we got lost in it? So at 5:30, we become mom and dad. We're cooking dinner. We're drinking a glass of wine. We're laughing and hanging out and playing with the dog and reading books and just being parents.
Wow, this is a $1 million tip about the app, separate app. I had never heard that before, but that's amazing.
Yeah, good. Thank you. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I love that. Also, in one of the podcasts, you described yourself as, I think that was with your first coach, as the business starter. But recently, you have bought a yoga studio, which is, and in another podcast, you said, whoa, this is so much better because I don't have to build from a scrap. So mm-hmm. What do you think now? Is it better to buy something that is already built?
Yes. You know how I said that the light bulb went off whenever the chiropractor told me that I could see my own patients? The same light bulb went off when we bought our business. And I know this is going to sound so obvious to you, but when you buy a business, immediately the money starts going into your account, right? Like immediately. Obviously, light bulb. I guess when I start a business, I mean, it's often profitable pretty quickly, but to get up to like in the brick and mortar world, to get up to $25,000, $30,000 profit months takes years, or it has taken me years anyway, to get to that point. And to just simply take a risk, borrow money from a bank and buy a business, and then immediately your profits go up by $30,000 a month. It was just a mind-melting experience of like, we didn't have to build that. All the systems were in place. The manager is in place. The manager knows exactly what she's doing, and she is killing it. She is amazing. She has all of her processes. They have a social media team. They've got everything. We just simply bought it and walked in and we're like, hello, how can we help? You know, like
amazing.
It was the most amazing. And I feel like Mark and I looked at each other and we were just like, oh shit. Like, we're never starting another business again. We're going to buy businesses all the time. He just told me, we just bought this business in August. And he just told me last month, he said, I think we're ready to buy another business now. And I was like, oh, what?
So it's not going to be the quiet year, like he said in one of the podcasts.
Yes, he had just said, let's have a quiet year. And then we bought a business and he's ready to buy another one.
And you know what's the greatest? Because when I listen to Cody Sanchez, it sounds like a great idea. But when you tell this that you have actually done that, and it is so easy, it's like, ooh, this is another one. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
here's the thing that I think, two things that keep people from buying businesses. Number one, you have to be willing to take a big risk. Like, it was the most money we had ever spent on anything. Like, way more than what our house costs that we dropped in debt. Like, we borrowed from a bank and dropped to buy this business. So if you're not a risk taker, I can see how that would stop you. Number two, we 1,000% underestimated the amount of paperwork that goes into it. Now, this was our first one. I think we learned a lot of lessons. I think in the future, we're going to have things a little bit more with our ducks in a row, but we're not paperwork beginners. You know, we understand paperwork, and this was on another level. And we were just like, okay, I could see how 90% of the population would have quit after 2 months of everyday paperwork, because it's insane. If you can get past those two things, if you're like, hey, I've always wanted to buy a business and I'm a risk taker and I can handle some paperwork, gold, it's golden. I told Mark, I said, I think that we're getting paid like this much because of the paperwork we had to do. We're just going to continue to get paid for the rest of our life.
You're getting your value back.
Yeah.
What has been for you the biggest realization or aha moment recently, maybe in the past few weeks or months?
An aha moment.
Yeah, not just in business. It can be in your personal growth or the creek moment with a cup of tea.
Yeah, I think that just the realization that the more that I pour into the things that I love that aren't business, the better that my business does. And I've always known this. I've always been an avid CrossFitter and weightlifter and hiker. But in the last couple of months, so my mom passed away all of a sudden at the end of August of this year. And so September, October, November, we're like 4 months out. And when she passed away, I didn't have the capacity to work at all. I didn't have the emotional capacity. I mean, there was probably 2 months where I just like clear the schedule. I am grieving. And during that time, I found myself just doing lots of little hobbies that I never would have expected, like reading books about topics that I never thought I would be interested in, like just kind of, for lack of better words, just kind of floating around in grief. But when I say that, it's almost like not in a sad way. I think I was like finding myself in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I was noticing things that I liked that I hadn't thought about. And one of the biggest lessons that came from my mom's unexpected passing was that when I leaned into all of these new little hobbies, my business just kept growing and growing and growing. And what happened was I was having all these ideas for content for my business. And even though I wasn't posting them or I wasn't really doing anything with them, I was writing them down and saving them for later. But my juices were flowing like crazy. It was the most creative I've ever been. And I think it's because I just stepped away from my business altogether and I just got to see a 3,000 foot helicopter view.
Wow, the bigger picture.
Yeah, it really was.
And even with all the grief and sadness, that, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, I learned in a grief book that grief is literally just an extremely heightened emotions. So your sadness is heightened, but also your awareness is heightened. And if you allow it to happen, your joy is heightened, your happiness is heightened. And it's actually true. I noticed, you know, when I was going through the grief, the sadness was unbearable at times, but I could feel on another level. And it's hard to explain unless you've been through it. And people listening to this episode, they know what I'm talking about, but you just feel on a heightened level. And so my joy was more joyful. My creativity was more creative. It just, I think grief can just snap you into reality of like how short life is, I guess. And everything just becomes more colorful and vivid.
Amazing. That's a beautiful description. It reminds me of the time when I was, one time was when I was deeply in love with a crazy person and the sadness and the fights and the love, just the emotions. I remember at that time writing, it's like, I've never experienced anything like that because I've been in normal relationships after that.
Yes.
And the other is when I went through a dark night of the soul as well. There's like the sadness is just so sad. And after that, I read the greatest writers. They usually went through this depressive period because only then they could write. And I was like, oh, it's actually beautiful because out there in the world, you think it's, well, the grief, like I should be very sorry for you and thinking that you are so sad and, you know, crying in a sorrow, but maybe you are, but like you're saying, you also had these other emotions.
Yes, I love that. Some of the best musicians, the best artists, the best actors, anything that is in the creative realm, if you dig deep enough, you find that they had some sort of hardship that knocked them into this creativity. The problem with that, though, is a lot of times they talk about needing the darkness in order to stay creative. And that's a belief that they have to be going through pain, or they have to be struggling with something or an addiction or something in order to be as creative as they are. And I don't agree with that. I think that grief and hardship can definitely spark creativity. And you can ride that out and use that, but it's always in us. And I think what brings it out the most is just drastic change. And you can change your environment. You can drastically change your life without going into a hole to do it.
Amen. For you, what are the daily rituals or things that you do, maybe daily or weekly, that help you to be in the vibe and run your businesses and be also a great mother for your kids?
Well, this might be very underwhelming, but I walk my dog every day. I CrossFit at least 3 to 4 days a week. I spend luxurious amounts of time reading fiction books. I just give myself a lot of space and grace. I think that downtime is when we become the most creative. And a lot of people are afraid of downtime because they think that they're going to like lose their edge or lose their mojo, or like, I have to grind because that's what's keeping me sharp. And it's just not the case. Like the more time and space that I take for myself, the sharper I am whenever it's time to work. And I get a lot of enjoyment with my kids because, again, with my mom passing, I think that especially in the last 4 months, I think I've always been this way, but especially in the last 4 months, I've realized how short chapters are, life chapters. And so I just spend a lot of time with my kids. I just hang out with them and play Legos and go on walks with them and see what they're up to. But a lot of working out, a lot of relaxing. I don't read nonfiction anymore. I used to only read business building books. Like it was all I read for probably 3 years. I got burnt out on that. Now it's just like romantic, obvious love stories where the girl leaves the city and falls in love with a country guy and has to break up with her rich boyfriend. Like that's what I want. all the time.
That's great. That's a totally another space.
Yes.
Another reality.
Yeah. Amazing. But you know, I feel like there's a lot of dialogue around that. If you want to be a millionaire, you got to wake up at 5 and journal and go on a run and then meditate. And then you got a sauna and cold plunge and sauna. And I'm like, you could, I guess. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people do that.
But you might as well read the romantic novels.
Yeah, read the romantic novels and just make really big, awesome decisions for your business whenever it's time. Like, I would rather hang out around my house reading romance novels and then once a week make a big ass decision or a big ass move in my business versus sitting at my desk all day doing these teeny little moves, hoping that my business explodes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's amazing. And I think what you're saying is just so many people are afraid that they're not going to be there for that when the big decision time comes. So they're better at their desks.
Yeah, exactly.
All day. You're like, I'm reading, but oh, the decision? Okay, well, I'll just finish the chapter.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Okay, so you have the New Year's planning party coming up. Tell us about that.
Yes, that is on December 18th, but you will be able to access it through January. So this is the New Year's planning party. I'm basically taking you through the two bottlenecks that all businesses face and how to prepare for them in the new year. So you're going to understand your business plan and your business strategy over the course of this 45 to 60 minute video. It's completely free and you can grab it on my link in my Instagram.
Amazing. And then you have another really delicious event in Miami coming up, right?
Yes, this is
tell us about that one, because I've been super curious.
So here's a little backstory to it. You used to only be allowed to come to it if you were in my mastermind. So I've been running this for 3.5 years, and this is my 6th event coming up, and it is literally the most fun. Like, for 3 days, we are business planning, we are strategizing, I am coaching. It is nonstop. We have these big, beautiful breakfasts and these swanky dinners and wine and champagne. It is so fun. And my assistant, Gigi, came to me and she said, what if we allowed this to be public and it wasn't just for the mastermind? And I thought, that's crazy. I don't know why we didn't think of that to begin with. So this is the very first time ever that anyone can come. It's $3,500 for a ticket. We're going to be in Miami January 16th through the 18th. Complete business building for 3 days, community networking. It is the best experience that Hell Yes Coaching has to offer. And I cannot wait to see who goes to it.
Who is it for and who is it not for?
It is for business owners that have a service-based business. So whether you are brick and mortar and you're providing a service like massage or hairstyling or painting or whatever, or you're an online place that has a service that you offer. It used to be, again, this used to be just for 30 more mastermind members. So you had to have made $50,000 in the last year. That is still the case for my mastermind. You have to have made $50,000, but to come to Miami, you do not. You can be a brand new beginner business owner and you can tag along and come to the group with us.
Okay, that's amazing. Is there anything else you would like to tell us that is going on and where people can join and find you?
Yeah, I think the main place that people like to absorb my content is on my podcast. It is called The Hell Yes Entrepreneur, and you can find it on any of the streaming services.
That's a good one. I listened to that one today a lot.
Yes.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us today that I haven't asked you, or maybe that has been on your mind that you was, oh, I would love to really share this today?
I can't think of anything, but just a little bit of budding advice for the end. Go out and follow your dreams, guys. Like, it sounds so cliche, but you're going to wake up 10 years from now anyway. Do you want to be in the same position that you're in now? Or do you want to go out and at least say that you gave it your all and left nothing in the tank and laid it all out on the court? To me, I just find business building to be so fun because I think I just put such little pressure on myself. I put such little pressure. I'm just like ready and excited to continue to move the needle forward. And if it doesn't work and I fail and I flop on my face, I just try it again. And this is how I spend my time. So if you have a feeling of potential in you, just listen to the calling, listen to your intuition. There's a reason that it is calling to you. There is something in the universe that you're supposed to be doing and doing on a really big level. And so have fun with it.
Thank you so much, Becca, for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.